Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. On this warm 48 degrees Fahrenheit. Boy, I wish it was Celsius. It's technically Monday morning. It's about 2:30. Working on a logo for myself, which I will debut a little later down the road. Should be pretty cool. Patreons know what's going on. So what this is going to be about is just a fun exercise in thinking. It stems from a few areas of input that I have gathered over the last 15 years, slash maybe my life, but pretty much last 15 years. I'm going to call it the Sun Portal Theory. And the term Sun Portal came to me via Eric Dullard, who did a little video in the desert with some guy who was interested in him. And the videos, some of you have seen it. He's just got the driver's side door open. They're just kind of out there in the middle of somewhere. It's winter or something because he's kind of bundled up. And Eric's just this eccentric guy. He's the guy that conducts the transverse and longitudinal wave experiments in his basement in the Bay Area, and basically proves to you that you can create an electrical circuit that travels 11 times the speed of light. He just did it with some other guys. And the, I think it's Borderland group that he created in 86. You can also see that Eric Dullard. I'm pretty sure it's Borderland. Every time I say that, it's wrong somehow, but anyway. His father was an electrical engineer, as I understand it. And they realized that he was really brilliant by the age of like 7. He has a father that was programmed that way and taught his kid probably something. So by the time he was 10, 11 years old, he was given access to this Navy RCA laboratory that apparently, you know, it's like one of those things where your dad's doing something. And it's like, you know, go over there, kid, and you can play with the stuff. Just don't break anything. And so he was brilliant. And he was the one that started taking Tesla's books and Faraday's books and waving this 7-foot wire around and rediscovers ether and goes, oh, my God, this stuff is just easy to detect. You just got to know what it is and how to do it. And so they take a liking to him and start teaching him things. And, you know, some of his stuff is over your head and over my head in terms, because he doesn't give all of the data. I know it's an easy way to create a scam artist, but when you see his lectures using nothing more than the materials published in the 1800s about electricity and his cavalier nature towards people asking him dumb questions in class, like, I love dumb questions. I mean, I think it's like, oh, okay, so you're more towards the beginner realm, and I'm really gracious to you, and I make sure you don't feel alienated when I start answering, and I just take you all the way through the steps as fast as possible, get you up to speed. Eric's not like that. Eric's a straight-up nerd. Well, of course it's this. I mean, like, he gets into that kind of mode. Anywho, he's sitting in this station wagon. Well, actually, it's not, but it's this crazy car he loves. He won't buy a new car. I don't know where he is today. He's going to probably pass before I ever have a chance to meet the guy. I don't know if he's as old as he looks. That's the other thing. I mean, he looked like he was in his 20s in the 80s, so we can't be more than about 10 years apart. He's just kind of got a rustic choice of facial hair and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, he says that well, the Navy knows it's a portal. The Navy and the RCA know that the sun's a portal. They just don't know where it goes. I don't know about you, but when I get out in the sunlight, because I live in Southern California, it's a religious experience. I mean, the sun is a gorgeous, life-giving thing, because the very basics of life is movement. Heat is movement. Why are you hot? Why are you cold? Well, your molecules slow down, you feel cold. When they speed up, you feel hot. So without heat, without movement, at a perfect pace for your ethereal currents, you don't exist. You either boil off, back to some basic configuration like carbon or something. Or you freeze to death, and then there's really no reconstituting your orbits because you have frozen. A true stasis machine for humanity would be some ethereal field, some electromagnetic field around the container that you're in that slowly, slowly, slowly controls the permeability of the shell of the electromagnetic pull around your body, thus slowing down your currents, but not disturbing their reconstitution when sped back up. The idea would be to slow down the current of water, you know, circling down into your sink, somehow slowing it down such that when you let go of that restriction of flow, not complete, but just partial, that, or, you know, make the molecules of ether take a longer path to go down to get access to that current, you could actually slow down the metabolism of a human being without killing it. But that's for a different conversation. So I sit here, and I was standing out here literally the other day. I was on a phone call. Anytime I'm on a phone call, I try to walk outside. That way you just get a little bit of sun if it's during the day, you know. And I'm just staring at the sun. And it's warm in my body. And this is wintertime. We've had a bunch of warm days here in SoCal, which is just phenomenal. I mean, the last couple winters have been brutal fucking cold. Like, where's all this global warming, right? And it just, you know, it just, in my mind, it became a being. It became a spiritual thing. And sun worship just becomes completely understandable. And I think it's sort of unfortunate when I hear either anthropologists or any individual in the world that tries to poo-poo cultures that worship the sun as if they were stupid. So they gave homage to the thing that gives them life. They know without the sun, crops die. They know without the sun, predators are king. Because even with just light moonlight, the predator can see in full HD. And you can't. It, you know, gives us this beautiful tone to our skin. I don't care what color you are. For me, the cultures, this is my understanding, that the Asian cultures that like to stay out of the sun, it was a sign of royalty and wealth that you didn't have to work in the fields. You didn't have to go outside to do anything. The person who was tan was the peasant. And thus became this ridiculous divide of you're trying to convince the rest of society that you're having more fun sitting inside doing nothing than getting outside and actually using your body, which is where your body rewards you with a more healthy body and endorphins of a job well done. Tearing your muscle, getting stronger. You survive longer outside than inside, for sure. As long as you can protect yourself from the elements, right? But I'm looking at the sun this just 2 days ago. And I'm looking at it, maybe it's even yesterday afternoon, I'm thinking, this moment I was having looking at the sun, it felt like a being. It felt like it was leakage from a heavenly world. And all I'm doing is looking at this, and whatever distance there is between me and the sun. You know, one theory says a long ways away, another theory says it's closer, much, much closer. But I almost felt like a Hollywood moment where there was like the sun rays were so beautiful coming at me. There's no filter besides these sunglasses. And it felt like there was almost a ledge that was being extended from the bottom of the sun's sort of, you know, lens flares to underneath my feet, such that if I could just get on the edge of that plank, I could just walk straight into heaven. It was the feeling I had. It was definitely a wonderful feeling. Why wouldn't it be? It warms my body, makes me feel good. Now, we know that there's this illumination worship by individuals that are, by all other definitions, by any other definition, are completely fucking evil people by our standards of living. So the value of this episode is to get your mind to switch a 180. Just as an observational exercise for your brain. Again, this show is all about making your mind think. So imagine this. we are surrounded by blackness, darkness. In any biblical metaphor of the term, there is light and there is dark. Dark is evil and light is good. The Dead Sea Scrolls talk about the people of light and the people of dark, and it's not talking about skin color, it's talking about your soul. Now imagine that the light is heaven, that the light is God, not just this physical, you know, ball of fusioned hydrogen on the outside of a plasma ball of ether in an electrical universe. It is actually a portal to that heavenly realm. And that all we have to do is choose to be in it, to go through that little hole. But we're stuck inside mortal coils, and we're stuck on this plane of existence, regardless of what shape it is. We're stuck here. And it's not like there's not wonderful things that can happen on this planet. I mean, there are. There's things. You can laugh and fall in love and accomplish something. You can go from being a child to a teenager to a young adult, old adult, elderly adult. You can contribute to the overall mean of existence. You can embed yourself into the history. You can leave behind your DNA to procreate. All things that we attach value to because we are in this human vessel. We keep thinking about the Matrix because things are so gaslit right now. There are so many conflicting concepts that claim to be the truth, but none of them can get along with each other. But you wonder, again, why is it that when a person gains all the wealth in the world and all the tangible knowledge that this world can attain, they have access to the Vatican's basement. They have access to the Rothschild art collection and historical collection. There is nothing besides local history that we can't have access to, meaning someone in Paris who's been in the Club 300 for, say, the last 400 years can't access the Club of Rome stuff up there in Russia. So there's some proprietary localized stuff, but in terms of how those pyramids got there, if they have ever been figured out, they have figured it out. They know who did it, when they did it. All history that's ever been discovered, whether there was giants and pygmies, they got the skeletons, man. And somehow these individuals at this infinite level of knowledge all unanimously become psychopaths from our perspective. They become killers. They conduct experiments on human beings. Their regiments due to fake illnesses that they claim are circulating the world but aren't. Injecting us with one of three drinks, one a placebo, one a genetically modifying drink, and one a genetically modifying drink with a cancer-causing agent in it. I mean, everything is going to cause neurological problems, blood clotting, all that stuff. But they do this. But even before they created this crazy situation, all these wars that could have been easily avoided, negotiated away, are stoked like the flames in a locomotive. Where they could end war, they continue war. Just because someone won and they don't like it, they go back for a second round like World War II. Maybe World War II surprised them. Korean War didn't have to happen. Vietnam War didn't have to happen. The Gulf Wars don't have to happen. 9/11 definitely didn't have to happen. But yet they orchestrate these things. They orchestrate these things, sometimes from scratch and sometimes like Pearl Harbor, they orchestrate them in a response to catalyze another group of people to get involved, thus selling all of their children into death, with this promise that Hollywood will make sure in the end that they are celebrated as heroes. In their hearts, they were heroes. Because in their hearts, they fought for their country, they fought for freedom, sold a bill of goods, but nevertheless, who knows if that was necessary or not? Maybe it was. How is it that they all become scumbags? How is it that there's not a George Soros out there, not one, that's willing to give away his billions to reconstruct society, to help kids get through college, to pass on their knowledge? I mean, there are billionaires out there who do such things, but they are not at the top level of that money. How come not one of them has turned in these kid touchers? Not one of them. Well, let's go on with the theory. The theory I'm going to throw at you is this. What if the entire goal is to get back through that portal? And that this is nothing more than Deadwood, South Dakota. It's Deadwood, South Dakota. We are in the middle of a lawless land that isn't governed by any country. Country being probably that heaven place. Somehow we got ejected into this realm. Maybe by accident, maybe because we did something wrong. I hate to think of the wrong one, but whatever. It doesn't really matter. We're here now. And again, the more that one grows up and matures, this world starts to look more and more like a prison planet because you start to gain this subdermal understanding, the 3D chess understanding of morality and suffering. The very deeds of all these rich organizations, all these mass media organizations, government agencies lying to you 24/7, bending over forward for all these pharmaceutical companies that want to basically systematically destroy all humanity. And yet they worship the sun. The sun, by other names, is called Lucifer. A friend was taking me through the Bible today. Tremendous how much this guy knows. Unbelievable. He knows the chapter and verse of just virtually anything you mention. It's really the good stuff. All eccentric stuff, man. But he was talking about the couple passages that talk about the sun god. And in the Old Testament, I believe, there's a passage that talks about the sun god being the devil. Now, we know that prior to Christianity, lots of religions worshiped the sun. Ra from Egypt was worshiped. I don't trust any of the South American worship stories that they were... I don't doubt that South America had cultures that respected the sun's qualities, but this sacrificing child thing to get the sun to be happy, I think that's more of a story to create savage perceptions such that when Europe wanted to roll over them, it was easy. But now, if the sun was a portal to what it feels like, this positive, wonderful place, how could the sun be evil when it is the very key to your existence? Meaning, either it's key to mortal coil existence for sure. Perhaps it has nothing to do with the soul. Perhaps it is nothing more than the mechanism that entraps the soul in the mortal coil, and that the basically being human itself, although we find ways to rejoice within this platform, it is not what we are supposed to be. Perhaps we are supposed to remain a soul, because that's our native form, but we are captured through this egg and sperm thing. That flash of light grabs our tail and sucks us in like a vacuum cleaner, and then we have to go through it this life, which is why we cry when we're born, because we wake up feeling like, oh shit, we just got stuck in this cycle again. Oh well. Our previous life understanding and our previous soul in its last immediate form is forgotten because as we engage this reality to exist, to not suffer pain, to make sure our mother knows when we're hungry and when we're tired, we have to start communicating so we slip away from our true form. Not losing possession of our soul, but definitely losing access to its lucidity. Why do the elite call themselves the illuminated? In one way, we know that they think that they're the most illuminated, meaning intelligent people. It could be just simply that simple. Did they lose sun worship even in their opulent form on earth? Why is there a Luciferian character, a goat? Why are all these incredible rituals of death associated with them? Now, we know in the modern world, it's the disenfranchised geek who can't figure out how to engage society that wants society to fear them. That's where a lot of the psychosis of criminals comes from. The violent criminals of the world, once interviewed, once grown up, once in prison for 20, 30 years, will admit to a psychologist or a documentary film crew, I was simply scared of the world and I wanted the world to be scared of me more. That way they wouldn't touch me. I would then have less to fear because no man would approach me or dare step before me. So that's a basic algorithm of survival. And actually, if you think about it, it's quite ingenious from a caveman to now that we posture that way. In 2001, A Space Odyssey, the sort of pre-primate man was yelling at the water hole, scaring the other tribe away until they scared him away in the end. And then he came back with the bone and reset the scales of what being scared is all about, forcing them to deal with death. Consequently, when he threw the bone in the air, Arthur C. Clarke's desire was to make that a nuclear bomb. So you would have a bone being thrown in the air, turning into a nuclear bomb, being the modern-day interpretation of the same threat. But it threw the pace off of the film, and it took it in a different, darker direction. So Stanley, I think, made the right decision turning it into some sort of, you know, space station module. We get really bent out of shape when we see children suffer in this world, because it's instinctual that it's our goal to protect them, and suffering is definitely not a part of my theory here. Suffering should never happen. Why would it? Well, we do struggle with death. A death of an old person is okay because they have accomplished their life. They're basically just playing a game, and when you get old and you become infirm, it is just a game of survival. How can you wake up every day, feel the least amount of pain, stuff enough nutrition in your mouth to get to the next day, and then maybe improve your mind at some tangible rate that has value, or have an experience where you're happy? Watch your favorite show on TV if you're in a wheelchair. Be with other people. Hear laughter when it's sort of the last thing that's in your heart, perhaps. But the younger that this algorithm descends, then we get a little concerned. Why would young people get ill and die, get in accidents and die? What God would allow such a thing to occur? It really prompts your most intense, instantaneous judgment of who God might be as an individual to allow such things to occur. One of the solutions, of course, I suggest on this show is reincarnation. If reincarnation is the way this works, then you're simply riding the ride at Disneyland, getting off and riding again. And regardless, if you get off halfway through it, you can still go right back to the front and ride it again. You know, we have a lot of security devices on rides that keep us in the seat, but imagine a roller coaster that goes upside down without that thing that goes over your chest. And for some reason, weighing a little bit more, you flop around in the car and you get thrown out. But you don't die, necessarily. Your soul doesn't. And you go right back to the front. And you're like, okay, my game is to continue doing this until I don't weigh so much and get all the way to the end. And then I can say I've been through that journey. But why do the elite seem to be so into this Luciferian character? Why are they so obsessed with killing us? Now, there's a lot of easy, low-hanging fruit excuses, which could be 100% true. But I just find it difficult that every single one of them develop this psychosis, this greed algorithm. Do they boil to the top? Like fat, you know, on top of the grease? Is that what happens? Is it just when you're that messed up in the brain, you automatically succeed to that level, or they find you through some program, through some educational thing, through some think tank, and rise you to the very tippy top? And then find out if you're intelligent, find out if you're loyal, and then task you with doing what you do. You don't even have to touch kids. You just want to do those things, and they'll set you up for life. They do like to have something over you, of course, which is the oldest algorithm written in several passages in several books. And as soon as film, radio, television came around, it was embedded in a bunch of fiction. But what if every single time we pass, we have an ample opportunity to go back through the portal, if we so choose? Perhaps it is simply in a matter of awareness, like an incubation of sorts. The more primitive the soul doesn't know that when it dies, it has the choice to go through that portal. But the more the soul spends time here and these epiphanies start to appear in human form, that once we transcend to this other realm, we then look around. We're not being pushed around in the universe. We are looking around the universe, and we see the light, and we go towards it. And then we go through that membrane, and we find the dream world forever. With the choice, I guess, return if we wanted to. Maybe that's what we're doing. In the movie Nightmare Before Christmas, there's that infamous scene where Jack Skellington finds himself in the forest, and he has the trunks of several trees before him. And each tree has a door to another holiday. Of course, he's, I believe, coming through the pumpkin door, right? But he sees the Christmas door, and it's just amazing. It's the tree, Christmas tree, embedded into the trunk. he can't resist, and he goes through and he falls into the Christmas world, right into Santa's workshop. And that's where Danny Elfman sings one of the most incredible songs he's ever written called What's This? He had the choice of staying there, but of course he wanted to bring the magic back home. And so there's this idea that, and even on Earth, we have this routine that we do. We go camping, we go on adventures, we go on vacations, we go to study abroad or something. Boy, is she amazing, right? But you find things, you learn new things, and then you come back to your hometown or your place where you live, and you want to engage in this new knowledge that you have discovered. You want to try it out. Perhaps if you learn how to do something that they don't do where you live, you want to show everyone because you have the same materials. You figure if you're interested, they're interested. So going away, going back through the portal and experiencing our true magnificent world, where those pyramids were actually designed. Being with the inventors of that and basking in this deep thought universe where everyone is a thinker, everyone's a creator. There is no competition. There's simply enablement. If you need information, you can always find the mentor to teach you. And that education makes it fun. Not being in God mode in the video game by any means. And you do have preferences because your soul has a partial configuration of information, which allows you to have a personality. If you were complete in your soul, then you would be sort of this boring, omnipotent, nirvana creature that knows everything, has no desires, because what is desire constructed from? Desire is constructed from a void. Curiosity is definitely fueled by the void. Why isn't there something there? Let's go take a look. I can't see over there. There's a void of information coming from over the elephant bone graveyard. I want to know. There's mountains over there. Aren't we on a mountain? I feel like we're on a mountain. There must be some cool stuff over there. And the second that man ever dug something up, whether it be a cool-looking rock, some sort of configuration of glass beneath the surface of sand, because a lightning bolt happened last night, and you find these crystals. You want more. You want something that's just interesting to you. And, you know, the more that you discover things that no one else has ever seen, you bring it back to the village. Oh, my gosh. This dude, this chick, has found this source of stuff. They are special. My friend Sid Mead, his last dying words were, "My work here is done, and they're coming to take me back." And for a lot of us that know Sid, knew Sid, that is such a profound statement coming from such a genius that we obsess on each word he chose. My work here is done. His contribution to the earth was giving us visions of positive futures, even though he did create Blade Runner imagery. That was his sort of catch-22 of his career. It was definitely his most proud contribution to film, but at the same time he said, "God, I created this really dark world." But regardless, for the majority of his, my gosh, easily 60 years of contributions, 55, 60 years of contribution, it was all positive, all amazing, even from childhood. But then he said the words, "They are coming to take me back." Now obviously, no one in the room, his partner, never saw any UFO land in the backyard and gray aliens come and go, ding, 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 we're going to take him back. No, he was talking about something very spiritual. And Sid never told me anything about heaven. His father was a Baptist minister and sort of gave it kind of a weird tone for him, because he was in the 30s and 40s when Baptist churches were very strict, not very fun. So it wasn't something he really wanted to have a big part in. He didn't criticize it, really. He just left it out of the conversation. He did believe in aliens 100%. 100%. He thought they were already here. And he never really explained that, but that's what he said. But he never talked about the celestial world, the soul world, even towards death. He never did. And there's nothing more spiritual than saying, my work here is done, and they're coming to take me back, in my opinion. But I think about that portal thing, and I think, my gosh, what if that is truly the expressway to go back to this place? Now, for an astronomy professor, they're going to laugh and say, well, my God, this is just a star. All those other little sparkly things in the sky, those are stars too, and we've named them all. We've theorized how big they are. A lot of it's guessing work, okay? For those of us that are closer to believing in a matrix, we do believe that the moon that apparently perfectly eclipses the sun, and yet they are, in official terms, almost infinitely apart in our solar system, to be able to perfectly eclipse each other. That's not what they are, and that's not where they are in the universe. So the entire cosmology model collapses once you start to acknowledge this infinitely unlikely circumstance that a ball 236,000 to 38,000 miles away is going to perfectly eclipse this random ball of hydrogen that's supposed to be 93 million miles away. Once you do that little computing in your brain and stop buying the Kool-Aid that they're selling you, everything collapses and you get a lot closer to the flat Earth model. Which, there's two sides of that game. One group obsesses on the shape of the Earth, and one group acknowledges the closeness to God and the fact that wherever we are is definitely some orchestrated event, perfectly put together to give us these two bodies in the sky that are the same exact size. And again, I'll just throw in there as a footnote, one of my most romantic theories that I heard is that the moon is a burned out sun, which is why it's the exact same size. The reason why it is white is that the surface has been reduced to ash. The crater marks are not craters, they're boil marks from what it used to be, a sun. And as it cooled off, those bubbles just kept slowly ceasing. And the guy in the mid-50s who said that there's no way that we can land on the moon because we have proven that it's a plasma ball completely complements that theory. So is the sun. So is the Earth. For me, it doesn't matter the shape. For me, there seems to be almost a communication protocol from the sun. If you pay attention to your soul when observing it on a day when it is rare to be out and rare to be throwing at you 75 to 85 degree weather in the middle of, well, the middle of, to late November. That's one interesting thing about where I am in the world. Now, for the people who live on the equator, it must be tremendous to be in warm weather all year round. But now, back to the theory. And this is where I'm going to spin it on you. What if the elite of the world figured this out somehow? By not just using, you know, electron monitoring equipment or photon, you know, monitoring equipment, but diving into the spiritual realm with all these secret projects that study all the things that they say don't exist. Because the second they say something doesn't exist, it probably exists, and it's probably a profound component to our universe. They figured it out. They talked to wise souls, perhaps cracked open tomes that had it all figured out 50,000 years before Christ was ever theorized to exist. Perhaps they didn't understand it for a long time, but over the years they deciphered it, found more tomes, found more people that were just autistically brilliant in this field and said, well, you just don't get it. It's this, this, and this. And through observable reality and predictions, they were able to prove to those who run the world that this is indeed the portal back to heaven. And on one day, one of these rich, greedy, weird people said, well, then how do we get back through that portal? And what is it like on the other side? And someone said, well, you just die. You let go of this mortal coil of yours, and you will go back through that realm where you will own nothing and you will be very happy. And so they make the decision. They go, well, geez, it's interesting that we actually want to be on this planet. We like living here. We like having all the stuff that is perceivably stuffable. We want to have it all. this recent, maybe, you know, last few thousand years where people became commodities. The pedophiles and all these guys. That's perhaps a recent evolution in the demented mind of these individuals, even though it's a predominant component of what they are trying to hide today. But the habits of killing us off through war and killing us in general and having no value to life at that elite level, although rationalized down to commanders of armies in a different way at their top level, maybe they're thinking, well, I'm just returning people back to this portal. Lucifer, God. Last passage in Revelations, Jesus claims he is the sun god. What is the sun god known as? Lucifer. This concept, even if it's not true but believed, would absolve all of the elite of the world from any guilt at night when they go to bed. Every time I kill you, they think to themselves, I give you the opportunity to return back to heaven. And if you're unqualified to find it, meaning you have no awareness of it, you simply linger in this purgatory and come back as a human being. Repoised to find a better situation such that you can gain the education, lucidity, the enlightenment, that indeed is your portal back home, such that when you die a second time and a third time and a millionth time, I am increasing, they say to themselves, your ability to find God. To understand that you're an immortal being in the end anyway. But who would be the arbiter of this knowledge? Who would be the most revered being to orchestrate this death, to rationalize this death, to give them a paradigm to constantly live in this meat-grinding world of reasons to create rationales to kill humanity? And that would be this character Lucifer, Beelzebub, the goat. They could probably figure out a way to describe this to someone who's very spiritual, but perhaps not that intelligent, that this is indeed the cycle, and some people just love authority no matter how it's presented. And say, well, you know, I know that you understand this, this, and this, and you believe that and that and that, and we're not telling you that's not true, but here's the bigger picture. The bigger picture is that only in death do you get near to God. Even that's what you believe, Christians, right? Oh, yeah, yeah. You can't get to, you know, God without dying. Yep, yep, yep. And if you're younger, you carry less sin with you, if any at all, and therefore you're assured to get to God. And so help us out. Help us out. Start saying goat everywhere. Now, it's the suffering. It becomes this, I think, in any theory, becomes the most concentrated experience of evil that one could pass out. But I could see some demented mind saying, well, in the end, imagine just an elite person coming up to you and saying, well, have you ever suffered? And you say, well, yeah, of course, this, that, and the other thing. My college professor was horrible. His girlfriend was bad. My parents were just annoying. My dad beat me up. And they said, no, 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 no. We're talking about really suffering. And you're like, well, what the hell are you talking about? Well, have you ever been, like, beaten up for a really long time? Have you ever been starved to death, up to starvation, up to death point, and then reconstituted? Or all these other crazy things you see in scary movies. And you're like, well, no. Not something I'm really looking forward to experiencing. And they say, well, once you go through this experience, you know, all this weird shit on the internet, right? All these fucking S&M people. Guys that like to get kicked in their nuts and they pay people to do it. And they tell you, well, you just haven't experienced that yet. This is something that you have to experience because you're alive. You're so alive. All your senses are at maximum. Most of us think they don't have a very good imagination. I would definitely say they lack some creativity in their life, right? I can tell you that with the pastimes that I have, I wish I could stop time and just engage in them, to read every book that I ever wanted to read, write every book I ever wanted to write, every movie, draw every piece of artwork, whatever, sing every song, whatever. I've got infinite lifetimes worth of stuff in just this form of my body that I'd love to do, that I will never be able to do, even remotely in a complete form. But for whatever reason, being raised rich and spoiled, it kills that circuit of creativity. So they immediately go off to some lowbrow technique that they believe makes them sophisticated. Haven't you ever seen some of these performing art shows for the elite that are just fucking weird, where it's just bizarre? I mean, it's really a halftime show at the Super Bowl these days, but it used to be, you know, just some really macabre, weird shit, but it'd be all people dressed in white, doing weird shit, you know, and you're just like, is this art? I mean, I guess, you know, art is this place where everybody can say that whatever is being created in the room is a unique experience, like a snowflake, and therefore it is art, and I guess you can't disagree. As long as you don't hurt anybody, I don't care what anybody does, but there's a point where it's so non-conventional, so atypical to the mind, that you're wondering what the purpose is. I always thought it was simply that they are doing sort of nonsensical things that they know the rest of the world has never done this before, and so they love that. I used to make this joke at work where I said, I'm going to do something right now that no one's ever done. And I would pull out a piece of tape, and I'd fold it in on itself, so the sticky sides, I have this non-sticky piece of tape, and then I'd staple it like 10 times, and I'd show, I just staple tape. That's like something no one's ever done in the whole world, and everybody would laugh. This was like in my 20s. And I feel that there's a rationale like that. But in the end, everyone's fighting constantly. They could make this place a utopia, but they don't. But at the same time, the overlord of this world that we're in, the God being that we tend to all gravitate to at some point, whether we decide to believe in him or not, we all gravitate to the decision. I think the overwhelming majority of enlightened people do believe in a God because they can see so many indications that life has been designed. I mean, way beyond the succulent plant that has Fibonacci patterns that'll blow your mind. That's algorithmically potentially just ether doing its thing. However, like I always say, all the fish, the insects, the birds, the animals, human beings, we are magnificent. In fact, the human being is probably the oddest looking thing on the whole planet. Everything else is super duper refined and very identical. When you see a grizzly bear in one state in America and you go to the furthest state away where the grizzly bear exists in a different realm, yeah, if you pay attention, you could find little idiosyncrasies and injuries and age brackets that are different. But for the most part, that bear looks exactly the same. But human beings, my God, we come in all shapes and sizes. We are weird. When you look at a praying mantis, you just have to find out what species it is, and all the rest of them look exactly the same. The paint jobs are nothing shy of a specialized paint kit on a Lamborghini, chosen to look sexy and cool and interesting. But now, what if everyone believed in this theory? What if everybody who believed in reincarnation wasn't given the second gift, which is the value of life? We'd have a bunch of people probably electing to take themselves out of this world to short-circuit the prison planet, and then, prior to that, concentrating heavily on what they think they might be experiencing to get through this portal the other way, so that they can return to heaven as quickly as possible. Again, one of my writing mentor, he told me the first night I ever met him, it was the most surreal moment, because I'm looking at this guy that I have. He changed my life. I mean, he utterly changed my life with his first film he ever made. And he's sitting on his sofa, and he's got these guests, because we just watched a 25th anniversary of the movie at a local theater, and then I got invited to his house, and I can't take my eyes off the guy. And he's talking about the fact that he got on a raft once in the middle of the, I think, Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Florida, and he nearly got stranded at sea. And he was stuck out there, and he said, I believe that he had dropped acid, I think, or he was hallucinating due to being out there too long, but it was the middle of the night, but it had a full moon, or at least enough moonlight he was seeing something. But he said he saw this sort of band of souls in this sort of ribbon just like when you see the animation of what's supposed to be the solar system and us and the sun, everything going through space, and it's creating that double helix through space. He gave me the impression that that's what he's talking about. He was like a bunch of souls wrapped up, and they were just diving in and out of the water. And he said essentially that it was funny because he was talking about this. It was super fucking deep, and nobody was really paying attention to him because he had lost them. And I'm staring at him. I'm right there with the men. And I'm behind him, a couple chairs, and he's talking to people to his right, and they turned away or whatever. I mean, it's just drifted or whatever. And then he looks at me, and he goes, I think his quote, if I were to quote him as accurately as I can remember, he says something to the effect of, he just makes eye contact with me, and he goes, "We don't leave this planet, motherfucker." And I was like, whoa, wow. And I just had never conceived of that. But what was interesting about it is that in all the years I've known him after that, he never really talks about the spiritual realm at all. In that example, you're not only talking about a spiritual existence and an afterlife, but you're talking about an ecosystem component to where the soul can be, I don't want to say trapped, but definitely spend time. It's hard for us to think about the idea that as we are born, we started out in one particular location, and then we penetrated this realm of existence, took possession of this bag of currents from the universe that we call our body, that we host, it hosts us, I should say, as we create this soul-body-mind connection from beginning, middle, and end. And then we return back to the universe and travel to our centralized location, where we started from in the first place. We don't really think about driving around this universe in our souls, going from point A to point B, back to point A. But indeed, that could be the case. And that sun over there could be our closest portal. And even if, in the cosmological model, all these other suns exist, let's just say, and potentially host life in some orbital thing, let's say it's real, it doesn't mean that they're not portals too. That's the sort of time bandits map to get all over the universe as souls. Now, I do have to acknowledge that there was a group in Britain about 10 years ago, probably a little over 10 years ago, they made this huge announcement that they were going to submit proof of alien intelligence that they had figured out. They had photographic proof, and it was going to be a big deal. It's a bunch of guys, just like I said, 58 and over, who needed another revenue stream. I guess I don't blame them. They're trying to create some entertainment, and they charged money for tickets. And they filmed it, and they put it out afterwards. And what they did is they took a bunch of the photographs that had been taken of the sun through these crazy optics. And as artifacts came back in the pictures, like absurd digital artifacts that you could tell, they claimed that every single glitch in the runline encoding system of these images was a giant mothership coming in and out of the sun, suggesting that the sun was a portal for all the UFOs that exist. Okay. Now, the only sense that makes to me is if you have this Bob Lazar antimatter engine that's using the ethereal waves of the universe to propel yourself through the universe, that would be a pretty ideal location to drive your ship to bounce off these huge waves that are going out the bowels of the sun invisibly to our eye and going back in the top, just like the Van Allen belts of Earth. It's like riding a wave and you're a surfer. You need the push. So that makes a potential sci-fi sense to me. But what I was seeing the other day was extremely spiritual and almost absolute in its reality. It was as if the sun was talking to me. It was interesting. It wasn't, but it was this incredibly peaceful, wonderful feeling of, hi, you know, remember me? Remember the birth canal of your soul? It's right here. It's called the sun. And don't get me confused with all these crazies out there. We know that there's efforts to block the sun. A lot of people picked up on the spiritual element of that. If they wanted to keep you captive, then deadening your reality to the sun itself and demonizing it to give you skin cancer while giving you a skin cream that when exposed to photons goes immediately carcinogenic. That's great. And then telling you a bunch of anthropological stories that anybody who worshipped the sun was cutting up babies and killing them, when all that was happening was all the Epstein bones were just simply being put at these Mayan pyramids, and then European people painted, you know, these ridiculous, totally European cartoons at the temples saying that that's what the locals did. When there's no other anthropological evidence that they had inkwell and brush. Just revising history. Just like they revised the Great Pyramids to be made by the local pharaohs. Yeah. To be called the Illuminated Ones, to label the sun as Lucifer itself. Now, Revelations is obviously a very bizarre book, and they think it's written by a different John that might have been trapped on an island that had indigenous peyote all over it, or some other hallucinogenic plant. But I think it's interesting that his last passage says that I am the sun god. Well, taken out of context, one could say, well, that means he's Lucifer. But if you just erase the preceding context that we now hold today about what that word means, they're trying to demonize everyone looking at the sun, everyone understanding that that is the door, and you should be very aware of it when you pass. But you should also be extremely aware of it as you are living in this vessel, such that when you do pass, there's context for what you experience on the other side. How many times have you seen the dramatization in a fictional movie about a person who's trapped in a dark place being exposed to light? They do not run to the light. Their light is like, oh my gosh, get away. It's like Newton, Alien 2. As soon as they found her, she didn't want to be found. Animals that are kept captive in really weird containers do not run out into the sunlight. It is not a friendly concept if you've never been exposed to it. So imagine they could deaden a whole generation to the sun and its magic. Again, demonizing it through dermatology, demonizing it from an anthropological level that, hey man, you're a savage and an idiot if you think that that thing's anything special. Stay away from that thing. Stay inside because that's where we want to keep you in your little matrix pod. It's just interesting that I've lived in different parts of the United States. And it seems that the more northern I went, the more unhappy people were. When I lived in Massachusetts, and God bless everybody who lives there, if you love the place, I don't mean to cast aspersions on you, but it was a very unhappy place. I got a friend who lives in Connecticut right now, and she's like, man, these people are really unhappy. Because she used to live in Nebraska. I lived in Southern California when I first came to California. Then I went to the Bay Area. Then I came back to Southern California. When I was down here, everybody was so freaking chill. I've said it 1,000 times on the show. I go to the Bay Area and all of a sudden everybody hates everybody. The natives hate each other. Of course, they hate the domestic immigrants who are just coming there to steal money to go back to their home state of somewhere in America. They came back down to Southern California and oh my God, it's just completely cool and chill. What is the cosmetic difference between the two? It's not as if the sun doesn't come out in those regions, but I will tell you that the sun exposure is definitely different because the weather sucks. I lived in Massachusetts for almost 3 years. The hottest day only happened one time in my entire lifetime, which was 88 degrees. The rest of it was about 72 in hot summer days. San Francisco, you can be in a part where inland, it's 95 degrees, but downtown on Van Ness Street, Mark Twain said, you know, the coldest day I ever experienced was the summer in San Francisco. And he's not joking, man. That place is freezing. Less sun, more anger. More sun, more happiness. The people live in the Midwest. We have a few listeners that live out in, you know, really nice wooded areas. They're happy as hell, you know. They go fishing. They hang out in their back porch. Now, what's interesting about my experience, because I got a little time left here, is that being an engineer and sort of a rookie electrical engineer, we know that, that if any message is to transfer from one place to another, that there has to be a carrier wave. You are listening to sound waves that are bouncing this microphone is being recorded on this computer, which then are going to be replayed and attached to this video. If you're seeing me, it's because I recorded the light that bounced off my face, and it's being recorded in a device that could play it back on a flat screen monitor, most likely. So every time messages travel, there has to be a medium and a protocol of communication. Well, the sun, we know for a fact, creates these ripples of ethereal winds that we call photons, intangible waves. We can use them to do things, but it's sending this vibration towards me, right? It is the perfect protocol to fluctuate the waves in such a way that not only am I getting stimulated and all of the growth patterns that I need, my vitamin D generation from my epidermis, etc., but it is the perfect wave to hide some Star Trek tachyon subspace carrier wave to send a message that is like, I am God and I love you. So to simply block that out because somebody wants to cite this carbon credit bullshit will cut you off from your creator completely. And then it's just merely the demise of man. Well, they sit up on the hilltops above the clouds and get the information and get the sustenance from the sun itself. We start withering away down below, becoming very unhealthy physically and mentally. And spiritually, between the two of us, we have nothing to give to each other because we're not being imbued with any beauty. You get back what you put out. Well, if you're frosting a cake with one of those little frosting doodads and it's out, then if you have no supply to put it back, put frosting back in, you got nothing, man. Life will get really dreary. You're simply living to live like a super elderly person in hospice. I just think it's interesting that when we take vacations, we typically don't pick regions of the world that are freezing to death unless we've already taken the trip to a more climate-friendly area, or if we live in those climate-friendly areas, like if you lived in Miami, you lived in Southern California, as an American, you might go to Alaska because it's still sunny up there, but it's definitely, and there's summers up there too, but you might go up during the cold era to be on a cruise ship to see ice or something, right? Because that is foreign to you. So in that particular case, you might have 340 days out of the year in the sun, and you spend, you know, a few 15 days or whatever up in that cold area. The paradigm of our perception of reality is absolutely everything, and even though we can say those words and understand it pretty much completely, the next game is to figure out what paradigm you do subscribe to, because there are seemingly infinite paradigms of perception. I believe that the more that you can distinguish between these realities, things like your dreams become much more profound. Because dreams are based on paradigms, right? What is a dream? What is a frame out of your dream? When I was young, I used to have these very primitive dreams that I used to call them frustration dreams, where I was in this weird loop. I was an atom. I was a human cell. And I was so fundamental to the universe that it was just weird feeling, right? I was one of nothing. I was nothing out of an infinite bunch of these things. But as I grew up and my mind matured, then my dreams immediately matured as well. I think about things like depression and people going through those modes in life, right? We've all had moments of depression, whether they be for an instant or for several years. And it does feel like to me that it is some sort of tank within us that has gone barren. And it could be something just as simple as access to the sun. And it's like a fuel that can be used for all things that human beings can conceive of, that we can do in this world, right? Where we can physically and mentally pull off. We talk about low frequency people and high frequency people. What I find very interesting is that the people who are obviously high frequency, just like a computer processor, as I say, you buy a computer because it has faster megahertz, gigahertz, right? Why do we do that? What makes a higher gigahertz computer better than a lower gigahertz computer? Well, it's because the voltage goes up and down faster. And that voltage going up and down allows you to create binary packets of information. It processes your stuff faster. It gives you better color. Makes a better video game. Plays your movie back faster in 60 frames a second or more. Well, lower vibration person is going to have much more primitive concepts. Maybe they can store a big concept in their brain, but it takes much more time to process it, just like a computer. So when you talk to them in your high frequency and you're taking a sampling of their thought process over a period of time when you can process, say, 100 gigaquats of data or whatever it is, they can't get, much more than Atomic Sinclair done in that time frame. Over time, they might get to the same ascension that you have achieved, but it takes way more data. And depression could be nothing more than ingesting chemicals that slow you down, or not getting your batteries refilled by the sun. What is the key sign of depression? Well, there's a bunch, but I can tell you one of them is hiding in your bedroom forever and ever and ever. That's just the best place to be. There's something external that's unrelated to the sun that's keeping you inside. But people who live in these rain-infested states, the suicide rates are higher because people are stuck inside. Their batteries are empty. The sun has not had a chance to give it its life force, its love, perhaps, its spiritual connection to the rest of all of us who are actually connected together. But the neuron to them just doesn't have any data traveling over it. Their dreams are dead. For me, this is a powerful concept that I'm going to start thinking about. And, I live in a beach community, and one of the kisses of death in being in a beach community is when you don't live in a beach community, you dream about going to the beach all the time, but the second you move there, you don't go as often. And there's two different levels of that. I have made a change in 2021 to spend a tremendous amount of time outside. My back patio has been my life since I lived in this house, but I get my lunch specifically 1 mile from the beach. I can see it from where I'm sitting. It's tons of sun. I just make sure I pull a chair out of the shadow in the wintertime, and I get a lot of good weather. Right now, we can eat in a t-shirt during the day, and it's nice and sunny. And when it's sunny, we get probably 18 days of rain here in Orange County. That's why Walt Disney built Disneyland here. So when it rains, it's not a bad thing. It's this nice little change, right? But it goes away. But the people I see who are extremely healthy and just have this incredibly positive perspective here locally, I know that if I ask them, how often do you go to the beach? It's very often. They have a daily ritual. They might run on the beach. They might walk on the beach. They visit it every weekend. The state of California, you need to know, is figured out that it's an ATM machine, so they charge a shit ton of money to park down there. And they never build enough parking for everybody who wants to come. The little patrol forces that write tickets, oh my God, they fucking love it, man. They just go down there and rack up, $1 million a weekend off tickets. I mean, it's crazy. The passes to park anywhere you want don't work everywhere. They'll say, oh yeah, it goes all the way down except at the pier where you really want to park. That doesn't work there. There's no pass that works there. And it's like, okay, I'm glad my taxes pay to keep this beach all up to date. It's kind of funny. But there's always a way to park and just walk across the street. Or park and do meter for 3 hours for, put your credit card in the meters now. It's awesome. You don't have to worry about having exact change or any of that crap. It's important, I think. It's important, and it's just interesting that in this latest sort of health crisis that they have invented, one of the pieces of knowledge that everyone gained was that vitamin D is an extremely important part of your immune system. Without it, you just don't have a fully functional immune system, and taking a supplement doesn't touch it. So let me know what you think about this, and let me know if you've ever had this sort of experience with the sun. I know a lot of you have said something in the comments, people that I've met. But if you're stuck in an area of the world that doesn't have that, then I want you to study the inverse potential. I had a friend for, about 6 months from the show, and she lived in Ireland in an area where it was perpetually raining, 200 days out of the year. And of course, it's lush and gorgeous there. But she was stuck inside a lot. And there was a seemingly a maximum threshold to her emotional spectrum. Because the cheerful time was it was one third of the year. But look at your own sort of metabolism of emotion if you're in a more confined area when it comes to sun exposure. And study your society that you live next to. And if you've ever lived anywhere else, draw comparisons and see. It simply could be that for a lot of you, like it was for me, you may need to move to an area that's a little more hospitable to you. At the Smoke Lounge, the owner of the place is very fond of South America, and he's looking at properties down there for retirement. And we're all looking at this, and we know that winters can rack you as an older person. We're not there yet, but even as, mid-50s or whatever, the guys in the room are like, yeah, my bones ache and that. It'll be so nice when the summer's here. I don't have any of that aches and pains like I do in the wintertime. And so they're thinking, man, it might be better to take my 500 grand and buy a house for 100 grand. It looks like a palace down there in an area where the cartel doesn't do any business. And just retire. Just be a quiet, quiet little existence down there. And you can get so many beachfront property down there. It's just nuts. It's a big-ass continent down there. But maybe, wherever you live, there's a more sunny area and you're not digging where you live, or you've accepted the lack of highs in your life. Well, you've got options in most part of the world. But if you take vacations in sunnier areas and you find yourself euphorically pleasant, like when I went to Hawaii, I've only been there one time in 2013, and I'll tell the story real quickly before I shut down, but I love where I live. And so I'm on this plane and my family's so excited about going to Hawaii, and I've always wanted to go, and I'm excited, but I'm not at this euphoric level that they are. And beautifully, I land on Oahu Island and I get off at the old Hawaiian terminal. So I'm going through this terminal that's like built in the 60s, man. It's where Don Ho and Elvis went through. I mean, seriously, it's the place, right? The Rack Pack went through that area. And it just feels amazing. All this wood and tiki stuff. And I get to Hawaii, and my dad just took us all around the island and stuff, because it's not that big. By the time I left, my saying for Hawaii was, God lives there. This place is ridiculously special. The vibe is special. The people are special. Unfortunately, they keep getting suckered into Democratic politicians who want to destroy the island, but one day they'll change and they'll find out it was a great place before. There's something significant to the sun. Aside, I think, just from the physical reinforcement of our design as a human beings, because we were most likely only living in the equatorial region of the world because it was the most hospitable. And then it was, I guess you would say the crazy white people went north. It was harsher environments, and then we had to innovate and innovate and innovate to get survival going on there, right? But anyway, if you haven't been to dthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's got everything up there you'd ever need, plus a search field, plus categories. So if you dig a particular genre of video and you don't like the rest, just go up there and click. There's over 650 episodes up there, so you'll find what you're looking for, I'm pretty sure. To all the PayPal and Patreon people, thank you so much. You make the show happen. In the meantime, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.